Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Tickets for the Run Happy Travers are on sale now for just $15. Don't miss Saratoga's biggest day of the season. The Run Happy Travers, Saturday, August 28th. Save $5 when you buy your tickets in advance at Naira.com.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Back about almost 20 into this third hour, and we'll see. I don't know if we're going to get to Bill. Maybe we'll have to save Bill for tomorrow for the Shepherd. And I should mention, you know, they're off the turf again at Colonial, which is as unusual as yesterday being off the turf. It's even more unusual a second day, but I will tell you, if you did not see some of the photography, they got 3.5 inches, 3.5 inches of rain on Sunday night into Monday morning. 3.5 inches. Think about that. Take a ruler out of your desk and hold it up. Crazy. Woodbury, I saw Woodbury yesterday at the sale, he and Olga. And in fact, Woodbury, if you're planning on getting some Virginia residency, don't rest. Get a hold of Woodbury and Olga right away if you want to get your baby, your yearling, into Virginia for the residency program and to train. Because they're filling up in a hurry. I said, you know, he said, oh, my God. He said, he said every third hip at the New York sale was Woodbury. You want to can you take this baby? So, I was sitting there when the transport piece came over and he got the sale topper. That 400. What was it? 450. I got it here somewhere. It's 450, right? 495. Dreammaker Racing. The Uncle Mo. The Tom Gallo. And in fact, isn't that Dreammaker? That's Gallo's thing, right? That's sort of the next generation of Parting Glass, I think. If I'm not mistaken, right? I think so. I can't keep, listen, do my best. I can't keep track of everything. We're going to wait a few minutes, I think, Case, instead. Jeff Madej is going to join us, too. And there's a sequence. You got the Minnesota Oaks, the Minnesota Derby tomorrow. And so we'll talk to Jeff in a little bit. And Eddie Keneally, though, is going to join us right now. And get a chance to talk to Eddie about winning himself a secretariat / Bruce D. And Eddie, congratulations, you and Homewrecker.
Steve, thank you. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
This is a horse, when we were handicapping on Friday, going into the weekend, and, you know, it's one of those situations where, you know, you got clearly an emerging horse. This is the point of entry. Point me by, and you know, two starts, and so he's giving away plenty of experience. Rusty Arnold did the same thing with Ginsburn, but it felt like if he kept going forward, that he was as good as anybody in here, and then he got bet like he was as good as anybody, and then he ran like it.
Yeah, we've liked this horse for a while. We nominated him for that race, hoping that some of the the better nominated horses didn't run. And sure enough, some of the horses that you wouldn't want to run against just yet didn't show up. Aidan O'Brien's horse looked like the real deal, and he didn't even enter. So we felt like we should take a shot.
Talk about his, you know, his development so far, because he broke his maiden at First Asking, going just 5.5, and then you brought him to Saratoga, and I thought it's funny, that was opening day, and I was all over Smile Brian, who got up in the just won, but that race may end up being pretty important, because this horse came out of it and he was getting on track late and made up a lot of ground in the final stages.
He didn't have a great trip that day. I felt like maybe he could have won that race with a perfect trip, but he just didn't have racing luck and didn't get beaten very far. But we were still happy with his performance, even though he didn't win, because he ran a winning race.
Exactly, and you got experience, you know. I mean, that's
correct.
As much, even if you're not going to win, you might as well, you know, get an experience out of it. And clearly, Kieran McLaughlin liked the way he ran, because you secured Louis.
Yeah, well, Kieran is an astute judge, and he handicapped the race pretty well, too, and he felt like he was on the right horse. Thankfully, we were able to secure Louis. He's one of the top riders in the country, rides with a lot of confidence, and he gave our horse a phenomenal ride.
Give us a little bit of the backstory involved, because we did not, when we talked about your thousandth win, we didn't talk about this horse in particular. So I'm curious about his backstory.
Well, this horse has done a lot in a very short period of time. He didn't make his first start until the third week of June. And already he's a grade one winner. So he has been a pleasant surprise to all of us. We did actually like him in his training before his first out. And he's acted like a good horse all along. But to say that he was going to be a grade one winner by August, we weren't thinking that. But thankfully, sometimes you got to take a shot, and it worked out.
It works out awfully nicely, and a grade one winner, and this, you know, I guess it puts a little bit of a not an obligation, but it puts some expectation on him. He's a point of entry out of a proud citizen mare. Winchester Farm bred him. This is feeling like a real bargain as a short yearling. $30,000.
Yeah. Correct. I mean, the stallion is not very commercial. You don't typically, they don't average a whole lot. You don't pay a whole lot for a point of entry. Although this is a very, very good looking horse. They just don't bring a lot at public auction. And he's an athlete. He looks the part. And, you know, he's the first grade one winner for the stallion. And they're just not commercial. But this guy is... a very good-looking horse with a lot of talent.
And Eddie, you know, it's interesting, because you look at the schedule, and there's probably a lesson here for owners, and that is, you know, be patient. And even with a $30,000 purchase, who missed his whole 2-year-old season, you know, look what you get now. I mean, talk about what went on last year, and, you know, point of entry himself, right, was a late developer. Shug explained a lot about him, about his career, you know, son of Dinah Former. So you get a little bit of that, but talk about his development and who broke him,
right.
Got him started.
Exactly. I mean, you don't want to rush one of them, and I think that that is the case with this horse. Although he did train nicely last fall, he was almost ready to run in November, came up with a slight issue. We turned him out for the winter, brought him back in March, and got him ready, and he made his first start in June. But yeah, he was pretty much ready to run in November. I was hoping to run him at Churchill last November, but he just came up with a very slight issue, so we ended up just turning him out, forget about him for the winter, and then bring him back. So it worked out good, and maybe it worked out all for the better. But he's a horse then that we did like quite a bit. I mean, we were looking forward to him coming back in, that's for sure.
And Eddie, and I've got his entire work tab here in front of me, which is really interesting. He got to the racetrack with you in October of last year, and as you mentioned, you were probably planning for that Stars of Tomorrow 2 card at the end of November, and eventually by December, after a couple of tries, a couple of works at Turfway, he gets put away for 5 months and comes back more complete horse, an extra 6 months of development. You couldn't have expected him to run like he did going 5.5. He's not, by pedigree, he's certainly not a horse that you would have expected to win first out going short.
Well, I'll tell you, that probably just tells us that he's a good horse.
Yeah.
He's not a natural sprinter. That's not what he's going to be real good at. He's going to be a distance horse, and he ran a mile the other day, but he will, going forward, he'll run much further than that, I believe, also. But he was able to win at 5.5 first time up because he's a good horse, just a naturally talented horse. But he's not a true sprinter as such. But he was ready to run in June, and I wanted to run him at Churchill where he was training. And it just so happened that there were two maiden races on the grass, one at 5.5 and one at 1.8 miles. And I didn't want to start him out at 1.8 miles first time out, so I said, let's run him in the short race and build from here. But he was talented enough to get it done, and Adam Bisiska rode him, and he was very impressed with him.
Well, this is exciting, and I'm happy for Home Wrecker to have a horse like this.
Yeah, they're great people. We've won 5 grade ones together, Home Wrecker Racing and us. We've won 5. So that's we've had horses for them for a long, long time. But they've had some good horses in the past, and it looks like they've got another one on their hands right now.
Bushfire, right?
Bushfire won 3 grade ones for Home Wrecker and myself. And, of course, we had Taylor's Valentine, who's
right.
Grade 1
That's
winner as
right. yep.
well. So, they've been all modestly priced horses, not expensive horses. They've been good, very, very good clients for a long time.
I love it. Well, how does the rest of the season unfold for Point Me By?
Yeah, well, we'll run him in one of the 3-year-old grass stakes coming up. There's one at Kentucky Downs, there's one at Belmont, and there's a few later on in the fall as well. So we'll nominate him to all the appropriate races, Steve, and then we'll, as we get a little closer, we'll make a determination which one we should run him in next. But I would assume he's going to either run at Belmont or Kentucky Downs.
Nice, and maybe the Hollywood Derby as a late season goal.
Yeah, I think so. I would think that would be on the cards for sure. Maybe the Twilight Derby. We'll see.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, we'll just take it one race at a time.
Point Me By the Secretariat / Bruce D. And Eddie, I ask everybody else, most likely, I imagine, the last trip to Arlington.
Yeah, it's a shame, really. It's a very beautiful track, and it's a shame that racing is not going to continue at Arlington. There really should be something done to prevent it from happening. I don't know what that might be, but it's sad, really. It's a beautiful facility, and I feel bad that the people in that area won't be able to get to see it any longer. I mean, it's just a nice atmosphere at Arlington.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, you came very close. We should note before I ask you about anything coming up. Should note that you came very close to a stakes weekend sweep because Lady Kate coming off the time away, and it's been kind of an interrupted year, but the very nice Lady Kate came back running at Ellis in that groupie doll and just gets nailed late by Brad Cox's Don Alberto Tappet filly.
Yeah, our filly ran huge. She was beaten a neck. Lady Kate's a solid filly. She won the groupie doll last year.
Right.
She was coming off a layoff this year and did not have a prep. She hadn't run since the first week of April. We gave her a bit of time off at the farm after that race. And but she'd come back really, really well, and her race in the Groupie Doll was exceptional. And I think she could have a good fall.
Nice. Spinster, or what, she's going to stay moderately, you know, distance-wise, or do you go longer?
Well, there's the mile and the 16th race at Churchill opening weekend, so that's probably where she'll run. She likes Churchill. Her preferred distance. I think a mile or a mile and 16th is her best distance anywhere
nice.
Around there. A mile and an eighth might be stretching her. But, so she would run at Churchill next, most likely, all going well.
Well, and of course, last year, the unusual and impossible to duplicate Groupie Doll to the La Troyenne. No La Troyenne in September this year.
Right. There's no grade one at Churchill in this year. The whole schedule was kind of moved around last year. The race at Churchill is grade three, and I think that's probably a good spot for her next.
Eddie, how about a quick snapshot of a couple of maidens that are coming up, and that includes tomorrow at Indiana, Itsy Bitsy Betty, and then Brondo at Ellis on Saturday.
Itsy Bitsy Betty makes her first start tomorrow at Indiana. She's a daughter of Into Mischief.
Yep.
She's making her first start. She's four, so we had her ready to run last fall also, and she came up with an issue, so unfortunately we had to turn her back out for a second time. She had a few different issues earlier in the year. She's come good right now, and she drew the rail, which is not ideal for a first starter, but she's very nice, and she'll run real well.
Excellent. And Brondo, you got Adam Bisquez riding, and this is Saturday afternoon in the 5th at Ellis, also a firster for Green Lantern, and a homebred of theirs, a Spitestown colt.
Yeah, he's nice. We like him. He's ready. I think he'll run a good race on Saturday. He's going to be a horse for the future, I think. He looks like he's got a lot of quality. His works have been good. He's just a very professional horse. He'll run a professional race first time out and could get it done. I think he'll run real well.
You know, and I haven't seen a lot from Green Lantern of late. Nice to see that they're... You know, out and about. This is out of a mare that was a half to Capo Bastone.
Yeah, he's a very well-bred horse, and they're great people to train for, and it would be nice to come up with a really good horse for them, and I think this horse could be the one.
Well, here's Eddie Keneally, everybody, that's working on his second 1,000 wins. And Eddie, it's great to be able to reach out and congratulate the home record team and you and everybody involved. Saturday's win in the Bruce D. Point Me By is pointed in the right direction. Continued success.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it, buddy.
Not at all. Eddie Keneally, everybody, one of our absolute favorites, and lots of good things. And that, you know, it, 5.5, a point of entry, breaks the maiden at 5.5? Yeah. That's a lot like what we talked about with Lee yesterday with the Gormley colt with High Oak breaking his maiden at 5.5 and is, you know, going to get better going longer. Well, we're going to turn the page here on the bottom of the hour and get a chance to visit with Jeff Madej at Canterbury, and there's a very, very nice card tomorrow, and I wanted to get out ahead of it so that, you know, people can anticipate as opposed to hearing about it in some cases after, you know, the racing has already started or, you know, already been over. And tomorrow night, you got the Minnesota Derby, the Minnesota Oaks, and more. Four stakes on the card. Jeff, good morning.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me on. Good to talk with you.
Absolutely. And here's an opportunity for the Minnesota breeders to, you know, really get the night in the spotlight. The card starts at 5:10 Central, so 6:10 Eastern, and the stakes portion begins with the Minnesota Derby, mile and 70, 8:40 Eastern time, and this looks like a nice group.
It's an interesting race, and the prohibitive favorite is number three, the Alligator Hunter, trained by Tim Padilla. He co-owns and co-bred the horse with Pete Matson, who's one of our top owners at Canterbury. Alligator Hunter's done it all. He's won 5 of 9 starts, $125,000. Won the Victor Myers, which is the sprint prep for the Derby. They have a sprint prep for the Derby and for the Minnesota Oaks, and he won that easily. And what's unique here, I think, in both of these races, actually, the Derby and the Oaks, is that oftentimes you'll have horses coming, three-year-olds coming into the Derby or the Oaks that haven't gone a route of ground. Well, both the Alligator Hunter and the favorite that we'll find in the Oaks had a chance to go two turns, and both of them did it impressively. Now, Alligator Hunter was disqualified. He drifted out. You know, to me, 50-50 call. I don't know if the order of finish was changed because the horse, the older horse that he beat, made his move at the Alligator Hunter, and he was repelled, and then he just kind of weaved in a little bit. So DQ there, but otherwise a perfect record here at Canterbury this year. He's won by open lengths each time other than that route attempt. So he is going to be extremely difficult to beat in the Minnesota Derby.
Well, you know, if you're using figures to kind of make a comparison, the horse inside of him, the Winchester Place Homebred by Benny the Bull, Bayou Benny, had a smashing debut and then was beaten in that prep, but that came on a wet track, and he's going to stretch out. He's out of an Include mare, and Bayou Benny, not ridiculous here, and Joel Burnt has got that kid's inheritance for Mr. Lothenbach, and that one is nosing around and at least has gone two turns.
Right, and if you think that Bayou Benny, like he did in that Victor Myers Stakes, is going to hook up with the Alligator Hunter early, then you could start looking for a horse to come running late like Kid's Inheritance. And the Derby has produced surprise winners over and over, so in the past, but I just think the Alligator Hunter is the one to beat. You know, a horse that's getting a lot of buzz and did early on, even before he was born, is the 4 Soda King, the first Minnesota bred foal by American Pharoah. Covered by Rachel Blount in the Star Tribune. Ballyhoo debut, didn't do much in that sprint. Tony Ringstorff started him out at 6.5. And the horse, he made his debut on July 18th. So for a 3-year-old, obviously, that's pretty late. But the Hannafels, who are the owners and breeders, are extremely patient. And, you know, they've invested a lot of money in Minnesota racing. They take their time. They want to do what's right. And they let Tony do what he needed to do. And the debut was disappointing. Horse missed the break a little bit and then came passing horses later. But, you know, obviously by American Pharoah, Soda King is bred to go long. Second start could improve. And I think that one will take some money for sure.
Well, and to their credit, they've taken this mare one more strike, a Smart Strike mare. Her first foal was an Uncle Mo, and then the Congrats. Then comes the American Pharoah colt. They've actually got a Bernardini colt that follows. That's a yearling. And this spring, the mare, who herself is out of Julia Tuttle. I mean, this is some female family that we're dealing with, and she's got to justify weanling right now, and not sure who, you know, she's been bred back to, but well worth following this horse, and of course American Pharoah himself beaten in his debut. So Sota King 8-1, and part of a 6-horse field in the Derby. The Minnesota Oaks, the Philly group, you've got 7 of them heading postward, and here we've got Star of the North, who we've been talking about really all meet.
Right, you and I, on June 20th, for the June 23rd race and the July 14th race, we talked before those races and tried to find a way that we could beat Star of the North. and, you know, she won again by open lengths, 1 by 7, then 1 by 3, and then she stretched out on July 29th and got to the lead like she always does and drew off to win by nearly 5 lengths. So, you know, we can try to beat her again here. I think the only way to beat her is to maybe look her in the eye, and no, none of these fillies have been able to do that. She's beaten several of them that are in this race, and there just doesn't seem to be a whole ton of speed in here. So I wasn't that impressed with the way she went 2 turns. She didn't finish that strongly and didn't gallop all that well. But, again, if she's left alone on the lead, you know, Rye Eckleberry knows her. He's, in fact, the only jockey to ever ride her in a race, knows her better than anybody, and he's gonna nurse her along, I think, and have something left for the stretch.
Well, and I'm just, I suppose, looking for somebody. The Hell of the North, the Twirling Candy Filly for Bernal Roan, That, the Rake Farms, homebred, and Hell of the North is the one that, you know, especially being drawn outside, that's the one that figures, you know, to be closest early, and it's up to Dean Butler, you know, how much he wants to challenge or press. She's stretching out herself for the first time here, although she did go 7 at Tampa, Hell of the North, back during the winter, and it didn't go well, but... she's got speed if she wants, and she just bulleted preparing for this. I imagine that she breaks running here, Jeff. She's the one if people are looking for, you know, somebody to engage Star of the North.
I agree, and I was surprised in the Francis Ganter on July 14th that Butler didn't send to go with Star of the North, because I really thought that would be the way that they could defeat her, and Dean was content to just sit back. He sat a couple lengths off the pace, and when the running started, had nothing left at all. So I'm kind of with you here. I think he might have his hands tied. He's going to have to send here and try to run with her early, and then we'll see what happens. You know, Francisco Bravo, the trainer of Star of the North, has said to me a couple races back that she's never been tested, and someday she will be. Well, that day hasn't come yet, and I'm thinking it's going to have to be tomorrow in the Oaks. I think someone's got to go with her, and Hell of the North is the most likely to do that when you look at the rest of this field here. And if some sort of speed duel does happen, then, you know, maybe we talked about Pete Matson owning the Alligator Hunter. He owns Owen's Pleasure in here, who is a kind of a one-run closer. Didn't fare too well going two turns on the turf, but back onto the dirt now. Owen's Pleasure could possibly get up into the mix. So if I'm looking for a price, that's probably where I'm going to go, but it's going to have to be a big price to try to beat Star of the North.
Turn to the Wally's Choice. This goes as the 8th, and now 9:40 Eastern Time, 8:40 Central. This is a mile and a 16th for the males, and a nice group here of 7, and... just getting a handle here myself. This is another race. I guess Minnesota Miracle off the claim. Mac Robertson, and Mac also has got the nice Cinco Star in here for John Mentz. And as it happens, of course, we had you, Robertson, yesterday, Jeff, off the huge wins Saturday in Chicago. And you know, usually Mac's my go-to usually. And I think this was only the second, maybe third time I've been able to have you on in the 15 years I've done this show, and people loved hearing from that sort of homespun Nebraska-style horseman yesterday.
Absolutely, and Mac is he's the same way. When you get him aside and just get to talk with him, you know, there's some bravado in public, but when you get a chance to talk with him, he knows exactly what he wants to do with every horse in his barn at the beginning of the year. He knows this horse needs to go here. This one can earn this much money. It's fascinating to just talk with him. And nobody, you know, he knows he's got a plan. It might not seem like it always, but Mac has a plan. I think he learned that from you. And both are just extremely talented horsemen, and they have good runners. And Mac has done nothing but win. He's a Hall of Famer at Canterbury. He's won the title, training title, I think, 13 times. He is a gem, and he's got runners in here with, you're right, Cinco Star and Minnesota Miracle, who I think, you know, it's interesting. He claimed this one for Novigrad Stables, claimed it off of Lothenbach. And then Bob Lothenbach came right back and claimed like a 7,500 maiden claimer off of Novigrad. So they got a little bit of a battle here, but that Minnesota Miracle with speed ends up in here because Mac knows that Drop a Golden Sun, that's a Rengsdorf trainee who can go, who has tremendous speed and could wire this field. Mac's smart enough to know that someone's got a hook, Drop a Golden Sun, and he claimed one that can do that. So might be some gamesmanship by Mac, because he can set things up for Cinco Star, who is a really an accomplished runner, winner of over $300,000, and can run at any distance on any surface. So Cinco Star, the one to beat, the 9-5 favorite. But Don Plata with Francisco Bravo, yep, and Ryan Eckleberry is a runner. This is a pretty interesting field. And, you know, when I went and talked to Tony Rengsdorf last week, the horse he mentioned, he knows, he loves Drop a Golden Sun. He owns Drop a Golden Sun. But he said that Zoe's Delight, who he trains for Winchester Place Thoroughbreds, is doing extremely well. So Tony was almost pointing me in that direction, which I found to be interesting. And I'm one that likes a price. You're getting 8-1 on Zoe's Delight. I might take a little bit of a look there.
That gets us to the Glitter Star and the Fillies and Mares. Going a mile and a 16th, and Mac has got this one surrounded. He sends 4 of the 6.
this, you know, the race came up. This race came up a little bit weak. We can be honest about that. And I assume that Mac is going to scratch one because, you know, I don't think he wants to. Even if he runs, if they all run their best race, one of them is going to be fourth. So I assume that that's not the goal, to try to make a couple thousand dollars on a horse as we near the end of the meet. So who that's going to be, I don't know. But a great story here in Ready to Run Away, who is the 6-5 favorite in this race, who's done nothing wrong. John Mentz claimed this horse as a 3-year-old. She's 5 now. I think since he's claimed her, she's won 9 times. 7 of those were stakes. And Mac is quick to point out when they ask him about that, you know, how'd you claim it? And he'll say, you know, Mentz picked it out. I didn't want the horse. And, you know, and now she's a superstar destined to be in the Canterbury Park Hall of Fame. But she
Amazing.
Is another one that's really on her game and will be tough to beat. But Clickbait, who Mac has in here on the rail, is pretty darn good as well. So he does have this thing surrounded. The only hope would be that Hot as a Pistol somehow could come flying late to get one of them. But you're going to have to pass 3 or 4 Mac horses to do that.
Well, and Clinton Stewart has had a very good, consistent meet, and hot as a pistol from the outside, the flat-out 4-year-old, and hasn't, you know, I don't think his, yeah, actually does own a win at a mile and a 16th, but it's off the page and going to stretch back out here. And there's something of a closing sprinter, so I don't know if she can, you know, get her way around. Rye Uncleberry rides back, though, and that closes out a really nice evening of Minnesota bred action. It is Derby Oaks night at Canterbury, the home of the lowest pick 5 in the sport, starts in race 5. And Jeff, I appreciate it. Glad to catch up.
Absolutely. I appreciate the time. And you're right. Race 5 starts at pick 5, and that's the toughest race of the sequence. So you're going to get involved, and you certainly should. There's a couple of free spaces, maybe, if you see it that way. But I think this pick 5 could still be juicy because the fifth race is wide open.
That's a 5-furlong turf sprint. Weather going to be okay? You clear for tomorrow?
Oh, yeah, beautiful weather. It'll be 80s and sunny, and it's going to be a great night of racing. And we should have a big crowd. It's going to be fun. And we're fortunate to have the fans that we do and the racing that we do. And got to cherish every summer evening like that when you live in Minnesota.
Exactly. There'll be feet of snow soon enough.
Indeed, too soon.
I love it. Track Flack, CBY, Jeff Madej, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's stay here. We've got maybe 10-plus minutes. Yep, 10, 11 minutes. Nick Tamaro standing by. NTAM 1215. And I know he's had a busy morning, so he didn't hear me mention to Mark Cassie earlier that I sat there slack-jawed and even after the wire, blinking my eyes as Got Stormy wins the 4-star Dave. And I saw, Nick, I saw an anguish tweet from you. That was a disastrous outcome.
I think disastrous is the right word for sure. Good morning, Stevie. Yeah, that was not a result that I could foresee whatsoever. I think you could have counted me among the group that thought God Stormy's career was over. And boy, she loves Saratoga. Very fitting that she won a race named for 4-star Dave. Not that
right.
She's quite at his level, but yeah. But her 3 4-star Dave performances the last 3 years have been really incredible. And, you know, they're a testament to what happens when you kind of situate a horse with a goal in mind and kind of work backwards from there. And I guess that's what they did. But it was very, very hard. Unless, of course, you put a lot of stock in the workout report, which really touted her. And I can't say enough about the job that those guys are doing. You know, there's basically one handicapping tool that was left out there for somebody to really grab. It's very hard to sell trip notes. But work clocker reports are something that, you know, really now you can see they're starting to move the market a little bit at Saratoga, and Mike Welch and Dave Grenning and Mike Vesci and Donald Harris, they're really doing an incredible job.
Well, and the difficult thing, even with that, and it's funny you bring it up, because I was shopping for like another horse and potentially a price, and you know that I'm a fan of hers, and I ended up thinking that maybe Balthus coming into town with that Whisper Knot might be a little clever. So she was the fourth horse that I ended up you know, thinking, let's involve this one. Let me just reach. And I, especially early on, attending the pace, I thought, maybe there's something here at 20 to 1. But he just did not stay on. And watching, you know, at that point, you're looking for anybody to come finishing, Nick, that is going to keep you alive. And so Set Piece was rallying. Casa Creed was making some headway, but they weren't going to get to her. And the way she burst away, I just winced and I said, oh my God, God, Stormy's going to win this and I don't have her. And that was the end for everybody. The proverbial snowmobile on dry ground.
Yeah, quite shamefully, I thought Raging Bull was an absolute cinch, which I think I said on your show on Friday, and he was, if you want to look up awful performances at even money, he vaulted to the head of the class, at least for 2021. He got a perfect trip up the hedge, came out, and had nothing, and was absolutely nothing like the horse we had seen at Keeneland or Belmont. Not sure where that came from, but that was particularly bad.
Well, you did, however. As much as that was a frustration, we should note you had plenty of affection for High Oak.
I did. I liked High Oak. Didn't think High Oak was going to be good enough to jump up and run a 90 buyer, but I mean that was great to see. And the son of Gormley, who now obviously is one of the better 2-year-olds around. That was a tremendous performance. You know, there was another horse that was training very well. You got to figure when Bill Mott wins with a first-time starter, they're well meant moving forward, and that's exactly how it played out. So that was a very great win for Lee Einsiedler and partners, and great to see. And of the terrific price, I mean, I know, you know, some stuff it's a 10-to-1 or so, but I thought the price was very was just fine. I did hit the low value Lee Einsiedler Daily Double that only paid $30 and probably should have paid quite a bit more for a dollar off the Speaker's Corner, but you know. You gotta get well somewhere.
Having sat there during that stretch of the afternoon to the left of Lee, I can tell you that he told anyone within earshot of where he sits in the clubhouse to bet the Speaker's Corner High Oak Double. I mean, he and plenty of people came and thanked him. The best aftermath of that sequence with the 4-star Dave being the third opportunity for Bill Mott to win 3 races in a row. I kidded with Lee yesterday on radio. The $91 all Mott pick 3 that he and his son Jeff had just hit a straight $1,000 worth of pick 3. And so you noted that on your Twitter feed. What was more amusing was who people thought might have punched the tickets.
Yeah, that was particularly funny. Right. You needed to think. I mean, and people out there who don't know, obviously, Lee is a very big bettor as well. And, it was pretty clear when those payoffs came up. And I think Raging Bull was paying $360 or so, or maybe $308. And Casa Creed was paying $91. Like, okay, well, this is going to be either an extraordinarily overlaid pick 3 or one of the all-time great underlays.
Too funny. Let's run through. We got about 5 minutes, Nick, and I'm confident we're going to stay on grass tomorrow for this pick 6, the second week in a row of a Wednesday pick 6 carryover, and there is going to be some rain, but I don't think it's going to be like we had the other day with a soaking thunderstorm kind of scenario. So let's expect that we stay on the grass. Why don't you run through this sequence?
Yeah. I think as far as the first leg goes, you want to focus on Vagaries, who's a first-time starter for Chad Brown that was purchased at Tattersall October last year for 160,000 pounds. Filly with a very good dam-side pedigree. Lope de Vega progeny have done extremely well, first time out and first time turf. The backup horses to me are Diamond Hands and Gunboat. If it's on the turf, obviously, both have excellent turf pedigrees. Both are out-of-stakes winning dams and come from barns that are more than capable of winning with 2-year-olds going long. I think if the race comes off the turf, Lemieux pretty much looks to be exceptionally tough. I would probably use either Princess Taruko or Highly Devoted, perhaps both if they each run, and feel somewhat confident about that first leg. Vagaries is the horse that was working with Mikulic, who was a debut winner, so I think there's reason to believe that she'll be ready to go. The sixth race on the turf, I like Sand and Sea, and I don't trust Crowding Out. I think Crowding Out is a horse that's going to be a little bit overbet, comes out of a really suspect maiden race from the 1st of May at Belmont. The runbacks have been brutal, and this is a horse who kind of made two moves. She was a little bit more comfortable racing outside, but generally when that happens in a race, it shows you that that's not a particularly strong field. So I would end up using both of them, would probably find a way to include Let Them Eat Cake as well, who has kind of knocked on the door but is accumulating a few more excuses than I'd like to see. The races in the sequence that are really going to make it in terms of a payoff to me are the 7th and 8th, because the 7th is a race where I could be 4 deep and really lack confidence, and that's using the odd numbers, Bayshore Fox with Cato de Pay, Chloe Rose, and Before You. I'm going to pick Before You on top. This was absolutely shocking that this horse was entered for 20,000 last time and not claimed in a race where two horses were claimed, including Next Out winner Shining Colors. Before You looks to be the controlling speed from the outside. Chloe Rose is very interesting to me off the claim. Mike Maker took this horse off of Bruce Brown, only had her for a couple of weeks. He got her claimed by John Toscano, and he's bringing her back in 10 days. So he's basically running her on Mike Maker's training, and what we've been all had a front row seat for is the Mike Maker show so far at this meet. So I'm intrigued by Chloe Rose, who I think will get a really good trip from just off the pace. The 8th race is so tough on the turf. I narrowed it down to 3 relatively obvious horses, the 1, 5, and 6, but Seismic Wave and Parlor just have a real odor to them, and they don't inspire a ton of confidence. Both are major drop-downs from where they've been at their best. I mean, hell, Parlor a year ago missed the grade 1 by a nose, and is a horse that showed signs of probably not wanting to run anymore last time out by breaking slowly and then coming up completely empty late. It's a decent enough sign that this horse went down to the training center at Churchill and has trained forwardly. Obviously, Maker needs to win races, so he's dropping aggressively. Taos is off a layoff, but Danny Gargan is very, very good off of layoffs. 365-plus days. He's only 2 for 4, but obviously you can see in the short stats in the daily racing forums, his numbers off 180-plus day layoffs are incredible. And this horse is the inside speed on a track where the rail's still down on the inner and inside-positioned runners did extremely well last week. I think we'll continue to see that trend this week as well. You've got the best pace jockey in the colony on this horse as well. The Bolton Landing's a fun race, and on the turf, I want to use 4 horses in some capacity, the 3, 5, 7, and 8, and Derry Main and Knees and Hips are really the 2 that I like most, and they're going to be the best prices. I think there's an argument to be made that each of them come out of maiden races where the figures could be a little bit higher. Again, making figures in 2-year-old turf races is a very, very difficult endeavor, and I think that each of them maybe could have gotten a little bit higher figures based on some of the runbacks and some of the things that happened in other races on those respective cards. And that takes you to a nightcap where I'm going to single clear Humor. I'm just going to concede the race to him. First off, a claim by Brittany Russell. I think you have to narrow down somewhere. And it's a little bit like last week where on Friday where the nightcap looked like a race. Wednesday as well looked like a race the Clever Fellow would dominate. And he did. And then Friday, Well Done West looked like he would. And he got it done. So hopefully we can get to that point. And if we're single clear Humor, take our chances.
Outstanding. Nick Tamaro, everybody, and Tam, 1215, and we'll monitor this, and you can always see the single selection and top 4 selections for Nick at In the Money Player Podcast. And Nick, I appreciate it. We'll check in on Friday. I'll talk to you from Del Mar.
Sounds great, Stephen. I will see you live and in person next week.
Hey now, Vegas, baby! Made some dinner reservations for Tina and I. We got Piero's for the romantic dinner. I'm taking her to Esther's Kitchen and to Lotus Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Look at you crushing it.
Right?
Ready to rock and roll. Yeah,
Then I'm ready to, you know, to be feted by, you know, by you and the cast of thousands.
Can't wait. Ready for it.
Nick Tamaro, everybody. I appreciate it. And what a fun, fast 3 hours. Matt Hegarty with the hard news. Mark Cassie with a wonderful visit. Eddie Keneally, he's magically delicious. Mike Pewich as well. And that was a lot of fun with Mike and Jeff Madej for tomorrow's wonderful Minnesota bread action. And Tam. That's a lot of radio show. Good luck today if you're playing, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow. At the races. If you missed anything, stevebick.com, podcast stream, archive, and back here, 6 to 9 replay, too. Listen to it all again. It was that good. Thanks, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.